to a mailbox near you. Amidst all the campaign mailers from all the different candidates, some folks in Michigan, including some of our stateside team, got something a little different. A postcard telling you whether you voted in a previous election and which of your neighbors did vote. A little peer pressure to rustle up more voters, perhaps? Political consultant Mark Grebner is with us now. Mark, just where are these flyers coming from?
It's a tactic that I invented about 12 years ago, and I was involved with a couple of faculty members at Yale University testing how effective it was compared to other methods of encouraging voting. And it turned out to be so powerful that it has now spread all over the country, so that the flyers that people are getting today, not a single one of them paid me any money or hired me as a consultant or anything. They just read the papers, and they're all doing it really on their own. It's in the public domain, and it's one of these things that everybody can do it, and nobody has to pay royalties on it. I don't actually have any connection with any of these. I've even gotten one or two of them. So,
and you look at that and go, yeah, it was my idea.
Yeah, and all over the country, people are sending me whatever the local version of it is. I've gotten flyers and postcards and so on from Minnesota and South Carolina and California.
So psychologically, what's happening?
A lot of people fail to vote. And if you try to think about why they fail, we have a very simple, stupid idea, which is they've forgotten it's election day. And so if we try to tell people it's election day, it turns out that has no effect whatever on people, or virtually none, because nobody forgets it's election day. How in the world could you if you were a registered voter? You know, everybody's just hoping desperately to get through it without, you know, more than 10 more reminders that it's election day.
Yeah.
The reason people don't vote is much more complex, and it's different for different people. But one of the things that factors into it is the knowledge of everybody that nobody knows if you vote. And it turns out that roughly 10% of the public tells pollsters, for example, that they always vote, but if you look up their records, they don't. So it occurred to me that what's happening is that people have discovered that just as, for example, in Ingham County, if you don't license your dog, nobody comes by and gives you a ticket for an unlicensed dog. So pretty soon people realize that licensing your dog is voluntary. It's up to you. Well, voting is voluntary. I mean, you can say you vote. You can talk about your political opinions. You know, you can act like you're a solid voter. And you just don't bother taking that 15 minutes or half an hour, which is what it really takes. It's something, it's some time you can save. And about 10% of the public has figured that out and uses it as just a little dodge. So this technique undermines that by scaring them with the idea that whether you vote or not is actually a public event, that your neighbors know it, that you know whether your neighbors vote. And it was an extremely effective motivator compared to other tactics, 5, 10, maybe even 20 times more powerful than the other messages that have been tried.
It's really interesting. I'm looking at one of these postcards that one of our staffers got from something called the Michigan Voter Project. So there's nothing about any candidate. You have no idea who it is. There's no website, because we looked it up, saying the Michigan Voter Project. But it tells him, according to the Secretary of State's records, you didn't vote in the August primary election this year. By the way, he did, so he was a little disconcerted to read this that he didn't. But here's, I just found this paragraph interesting. Because we keep track of every individual voter, when you skip an election, we worry it could become a habit, a bad habit we want you to break. We'll be looking for you at the polls Tuesday. Is it just me, or does this kind of smack of Big Brother watching me or a nanny scolding me?
Well, it does. It does, but you notice that you can't trace it, and so you can't vote against whoever did it. So if that pressures you or whoever received it to go vote, then they're ahead and they're not behind. That's why a candidate who did that, you know, you might blame them for Big Brotherism, but you can't blame the Michigan Voter Project, which, by the way, is one of the names that I filed. I mean, I think somebody's using my name, and that's my language in that postcard. Lordy, they ought to pay me for that.
Let me ask you this. How does this actually get assembled? How does Campaign X or whomever get my name and find out whether or not I voted? You just go to the Secretary of State's office? Or, I mean, what's the mechanics of this?
The way that we vote is actually based on what was discovered to work back in the 1880s and 1890s when the secret ballot was introduced in Michigan. And one of the pieces of that was that whether you vote or not has to be public record in order to prevent people from, for example, voting fraudulently. So it's necessary for campaigns and officials and even the public to be able to look somebody up a year later and see if they were on the rolls or not, so that it can be confirmed whether they were alive and living in the right area and so forth, and whether you could check your own voter record. Now, at this point, the way you get that record, it used to be quite difficult. You could go look at the paper record in the courthouse 100 years ago. But today, for about $25, the Secretary of State will sell you a file which has 7 million names on it and has essentially every voter in the state and whether they voted in each election. You can get it. Everybody can get it. It's very public.
Interesting, interesting stuff. And as you say, you found research has backed up this claim that it does move the needle and gets people into the voting booth.
Turnout dropped dramatically about 140 years ago, about 1870, when the secret ballot was introduced. Because in the good old days, it wasn't just whether you voted, it was how you voted that was public. Because you went and voted even out loud, sometimes in writing, but sometimes you actually spoke your candidate preferences in front of the election judges. And there'd be a crowd at the polls, and they'd cheer and they'd boo. There were fist fights at the polls. There were a lot of times the polling place was in a saloon, and so it was just kind of a natural part of elections to drink. But because everybody knew how you voted and how you were going to vote, they could actually round up their voters, deliver them to the polls, watch them all vote, and take them home. It's kind of a funny fact. One of the reasons that people resisted female suffrage was because voting in the 1870s and before was very similar to a fist fight, except more organized. And it was thought that women really couldn't participate in this kind of a bloody, drunken brawl. Secrecy of the ballot kind of civilized and brought about the system we have today. But at the same time, that dramatically reduced turnout because elections ceased to be a public event and became a private event. So what my idea was to partially return this to the public sphere so that you would almost think that you voted in the view of your neighbors. I kind of think of it the same as, say, recycling. One of the reasons that recycling programs are effective is because you put your bin out there on the curb and people can see, your neighbors can see whether you recycle or not. You know, if recycling were completely secret, in other words, you have to take it to a recycling center, then participation is quite a bit lower. But where recycling is done as a public process, like a ceremony, well, that raises participation.
And the same goes with voting. Mark, really, really, really interesting putting history together and kind of connecting the dots and showing us how this tactic you came up with gives a creative use of a little peer pressure to get people in to vote. Mark, thank you so much for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you.
Mark Rebner is a political consultant.